Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's edition of the Mad Tech Podcast. This is a very special.
You've got to be kidding me.
I know, it's starting already. This is a special edition of the Mad Tech Podcast. It's Christmas special. Kieran's unwrapping some Krispy Kreme donuts in the background. And the idea behind it. Oh my God, I feel like I'm.
Put the box down.
Sit down. Right. Special Christmas special.
Special needs.
Ad Exchanger style, which is just the.
Ad Exchanger?
Style.
Yes, will you
bear with me?
Right.
Which is basically the staff of Exchange with editorial, I'm using air quotes here, staff of Exchange Wire, sitting around chatting through issues of the day. And we're getting off to an excellent start. So I'm just going to introduce everyone around the table. Lindsay Rowntree, head of content. Hi Lindsay.
There. Hi.
Matt Broughton.
Oh my God.
Exchange Wire editor. Hi Matt.
Ho ho yo.
And Kieran O'Kane, chief crack destroyer.
Hello.
You're no crack at all today.
I'm brilliant crack. Just let's get going.
God. We are going. This is it. This is the actual podcast.
I am already exhausted. This has already been recorded. Yeah. So that shit show in the middle was being recorded.
I was making the donuts available for all the staff.
Thank you so much, Kieran.
Thank you, Paul Evans, for
Paul
the donuts.
Paul Evans brought some donuts into the office for us this morning. Kieran destroyed the box that they came in, all because he's got somewhat of a hangover and woke up with peanut butter toast in his hair.
This is true. I didn't realise it was actually peanut butter in my hair. Fucking hell.
And it is about midday, so that peanut butter has been there for a long time.
Tasty treats. Tasty.
Right, I'm going to try and bring some form and order to this. The idea behind this Christmas special was for us to just have a chat about what big stories of the year. What were the big stories of the year that resonated with us individually, together as a collective? What are some of the most interesting trends that we observed this year? What was the year that was 2019? Kieran, if you carry on nodding at me like a person that's just had a lobotomy, I am going to eject you from the podcast room.
Okay. Oh, God.
And we can't start with Kieran because he hasn't had thought this through yet. He's got no idea. So actually...
The cookie!
Roulette. Roulette. And also too, because as soon as I let you off the leash, you're just going to rant.
That's
for 45
the end of
minutes. So I'm going to go to Matt Broughton first. Matt.
Fair. So I think the biggest story from my perspective of the year was the ICO and their examination into RTB, ad tech, the entire ecosystem and what the legality of it is.
Yeah.
And I think it's appropriate at Christmas that we're looking at a body that are making a list, checking it twice and going to find out who is naughty or nice in the ad tech industry.
How long did it take to come up with that?
I have had that in my mind for weeks.
Oh my God. That is so shit.
Get out of this room now. Get out.
I love it.
But it's...
Yeah. I could see Ali Shah dressed up as Santa Claus, right, actually.
I think he'd be dressed like one of the four horses of the apocalypse, or four horsemen
of the apocalypse.
Four horses.
Horses. Dressed as a horse.
One of Santa's horses.
I mean, that is definitely one of the fine stories of the year. The ICO.
Finest. Well, I mean, sort of most
defining.
Interesting.
Defining.
Oh, sorry, defining. Yeah. I was going to say.
I mean, they've made it clear that they're not happy with the open RTP protocol, and our friend. Johnny Ryan from Dublin has been put the boot in.
Is he wee?
He's very wee.
Is he?
He is wee.
He always wears his shirt, the
Listeners,
tie, which
just,
is bigger.
Just qualifying, that means short. Just in case.
And obviously he's, you know, putting the boot in and exposing some of the bad practices, inverted commas, because who thinks of bad practices is all subjective, of use of data in the bid stream. And we will soon see what happens out of that between fines and... Actually, do we have to re-architect the open RTP protocol and programmatic in display?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we've chatted about the ICO a lot this year off the back of the RTB report. And, you know, obviously we had them on stage at ATS London this year. It does feel like they've definitely been a key feature of the year. And we're still talking about them because, Lara O'Reilly wrote a helpful piece last week about where they're at in terms of their update on the RTB report. We also were just talking about the fact that they're releasing another update to the RTB report on the 20th of December. Not sure when this podcast is going to go
out. Merry Christmas. Before then,
that's it. So it does feel like they've definitely been, a key feature of the year. I guess the question is, what is the impact going to be for 2020 and beyond? Because, you know, this is not going to go away, you know, regardless of their ruling around RTB and whether the RTB protocol is going to have to be rewritten and so forth. What's going to be the longer term impact for the industry?
I feel like at the moment people are between a rock and a hard place. They aren't really sure what's going to happen. There needs to be a fine levelled at an ad tech company in the UK for then people to kind of go,
right,
they were serious, they do mean business, this is what they find for whatever purpose to whatever company. We now know that that's now our baseline. We know we should and shouldn't do. Because at the moment, I think it's just so much speculation. Everyone's going, the ICO aren't really engaging with us. The ICO are engaging with us really well. They're only speaking to the IAB, not speaking to anybody else. They're not speaking to publishers and brands. Oh no, wait, they are speaking to publishers and brands.
Yeah.
And there's no real synergy and understanding. No. Exactly. And I feel like something needs to happen for everyone to go, right, okay, now I understand what the game is, what their game is, and now I can act accordingly.
Is it a case that this is them testing, oh, it's not necessarily them, but this entire process is kind of testing the legislation. Now we need to see them bring some action forward so that people can understand the parameters of the legislation and arrange themselves accordingly.
Yeah, Canil have been active in France. They've leveled a couple of fines. They've also done a lot of investigations that they've made public who they're investigating. The ICO haven't done that or aren't doing that yet. They might well start saying these are the companies we're looking at. But yeah, nothing's happened yet. So no one really knows what to do. And everyone's just kind of like not scared of looking too far in the future.
It's a phony war. It feels like a phony war. You know, it's not a real war on the cookie. It's a phony war. And then it once someone gets fined, that's when people start to panic.
Stuff's going to get real.
Well, yeah, because then it's like, then it's actually a tangible fine. And it's going to happen. Like, some of the practices going on in the space are just, you know, unacceptable.
Oh, look, Kieran, it's your cheese sandwich. Yeah,
come in with a cheese sandwich and a can of Coke.
Look at that. Listeners in the background,
this is ridiculous.
We've got another one of our editors just dropping off a cheese sandwich for hungover Kieran.
Is it a cheese? Is it toasted cheese?
Yeah. Oh, Kieran, just a little bit amazing. Of a tip. Little bit of a tip there. Don't get it in your hair. Go straight for the mouth.
Okay, I'm being serious here, right? So, you know, it's hard to keep a straight face when you got peanut butter in your hair. So, you know, I think that. Whatever comes out of this, it's going to change. Like, we're in a period now where we're transitioning, right, to a cookie-less world, right? And it doesn't matter how many sticky plasters you put on this, we have to solve this problem, right? And the ICO are obviously just basically are kind of enacting what the European Union, GDPR and all the rest of it have decided what is deemed as privacy online, right? But ultimately, it's going to come down to the browsers, right? The ITP. The biggest elephant in the room is not the ICO. It's Google, right? Like, our entire ecosystem is depending on Google not to change the rules in Chrome, right? And it's a horrible place to be, depending on a company that hasn't got the best track record in doing the best for other people.
Yeah, having others interested at heart. I mean, do we know what's your view about anyone who's front-footed on this? Is anyone front-footed at all? I mean, we know that there
front-footed?
Are people that are trying to get ahead of the... Did you say club-footed?
Yeah. Well, that sounds like the industry in a nutshell. Everybody's club-footed.
There's a few of them, for sure. Definitely a few people club-footed.
I mean, is there anyone getting ahead? Thank you very much, Lindsay. Anyone getting ahead of the game here? Existing tech companies. So here, yeah, it's great. Scrunch up. Matt, I don't know. I'm looking to you because I'm just thinking, have you come across anyone that's talking about this differently or from a different perspective?
I think everyone's realised things have to change. But I think where we've... Sorry, just looking over to Kieran.
God.
Doing everything possible to not get sandwich in his hair, but
failing.
Exactly.
Dramatically.
But I think everyone's realised they've got to pivot away from cookie usage, either from regulatory or browser regulations. And then it's a case of what do we go to? Obviously, contextual solutions, a lot of people have been talking about those. But other than that, it's a case of what can we do? And I think that's going to be the big defining question.
Nobody knows. Yeah. Nobody has a clue. Everybody's hoping, against hope, that Google don't close the door, right? But the reality is we have to find solutions that work for the industry. And there are companies out there like Permutive and InfoSum who are actually pushing the boundaries of what we can and can't do, particularly Info Sunday, seem to be very bullish on what they're doing. And actually, you know, when you talk to some of the vendors who are working with them, this is, it could be very interesting. So there are potentially solutions out there. But the reality is, it's going to come down to first-party data, right? Who has it and who doesn't? And you can use a contextual, and maybe you can use InfoSum, but the reality is we're going to, probably a lot of the web-based stuff is going to have to be logged in data for it to work and to be privacy first. But that doesn't really exclude, like, if you think about web-based stuff, display advertising, maybe it just becomes a Google ecosystem. But ad tech is going to do well because there's other channels that don't want to have Google or Facebook anywhere near it, right? So I'm thinking about CTV, I'm thinking about audio, I'm thinking about digital out of home, I'm thinking about in transit media, all these sort of like little sort of pockets of supply and really unique data sets that will be helped by ad tech.
Yeah.
And I think it's exciting. It's just a bit, when you work in an industry that's depended on the cookie for like 15, 20 years.
Yeah, it's a big moment. It's a big moment.
It's a huge moment.
Yeah. Are you saying everyone should pivot to CTV, audio, and out of home?
No, I never said that. I mean, if you look at every single, if you look at every marketing message from ad tech companies, they're all heading into CTV.
Everyone's going to be very crowded very quickly.
But if you think about, I think the best example of that is probably the Trade Desk, right? So, you know, the Trade Desk are obviously, they're pushing their own cookie, right? And they still do a lot on web. But, you know, they've been actively and publicly pushing the CTV message. We are the buying a platform for CTV, and it's been very smart, and you know that will come to fruition where, you know, the likes of the Trade Desk or MediaMath or whatever DSP is left standing will be you know, looking to plug into digital out of home and CTV and web based. This is sort of a theme for next year, which is that's programmatic is everything, as opposed to just, I know you spoke about this on the previous podcast with Paul, which would have been weeks ago.
It was two, three weeks ago. Probably. Yes.
and he mentioned that as well, and he's just, you know, basically rubbing my ideas because he saw it on
LinkedIn.
How
do you know you weren't in the room?
I don't know. I heard it.
Were you?
Oh my God, you were eavesdropping.
Listening with your ear up against the door.
No, I just heard him talk about it. But that's a good narrative for going forward.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I mean, we're gonna sort of start to dive into other people's big moments. I reckon. Yeah. Carry on with the cheese sandwich there, Ciarán.
It's tuna cheese.
Is it? Oh, that makes it a bit more interesting. Okay, Lindsay, what? Now that you've had a Krispy Kreme and nearly choked to death on a bear, thank you for doing that very quietly.
Saw that, did you?
I did.
Okay.
But I'm pleased that you did it very quietly.
Yeah.
Your big story, defining moment of 2019.
I mean, annoyingly, like, the two biggest stories for me have been anything regarding the cookie and ITP and the future of what the browsers are doing. So ITP, ETP, everything else, yeah. and ICO and GDPR related stuff. Like, yeah. I don't want to just go, not like have my own opinion on these things, but they, in terms of like year defining moments, they have definitely been it. Outside of that, obviously there's been lots of highlights in terms of looking at kind of future areas of growth, and there's been exciting stuff happening, kind of looking at new channels and how they're evolving. They, for me, are the interesting things that I think we should be watching next year. But it's definitely been around, I mean, we've talked about identity a lot this year.
Yeah.
It's been, everyone's been talking about it. You know, we've run events, like events talking about it. We've had subject matters on podcasts about it.
Yeah.
That is such a big thing. And like Ciarán saying just now, like, there are companies out there trying to find solutions. But I think still at the moment, people are sort of wondering, well, solutions to what? Because we don't know what the outcome's going to be. Mm. We still don't know what Google are going to do. We still don't know what the ICO are going to do. We don't know what the future of identity looks like for a person. Ciarán is getting cheese all down him. I mean,
it's very distracting, isn't it? If you could just see.
It's like a bloody waterfall down his jumper.
Basically, it's like having a chimp in the room.
Exactly right.
Not a well-trained
child. Or a very small child.
Scraping it off the floor. Absolute animal.
Oh my God, pull yourself together.
Oh, you've got cheese on your face. Please get it off your face.
Yes, well, anyway, Lindsay, you were saying. It's not, okay, the world of ID. Yeah, you're right. We've talked about ID a lot this year. And we've also talked with people that are, we've talked with technology vendors, you know, incumbent existing technology vendors that are talking about their focus on identity and their efforts to build an identity solution.
You're getting distracted, still, are you?
I mean, Ciarán's out on the floor. Basically underneath the table now, picking up bits of tuna and cheese. So you've kind of got that going on in the background. Then you've got new technology solutions and providers that are that are not necessarily working explicitly on an identity solution, but they're definitely working on how the industry can continue to undertake personalized advertising in a cookieless environment or in environments, other environments at scale. So you've kind of got that going on, and then you've got all of the regulation and everything that's incredibly opaque attached to that. The fact that you don't quite know where the regulations are going, we don't quite know what that's actually going to mean for the industry from an explicit sort of rules point of view. So it's leaving us sort of obsessed with identity, privacy, regulation and the disappearance of the cookie, but still in limbo.
Yeah,
not really.
I think
knowing.
We're obsessed with them, and you know, we talked about this earlier, like everyone is just kind of like going through the motions, but they're not really able to really look that far ahead because they don't know what's going to happen in 3 months' time, let alone in 3 weeks' time. So everyone's just kind of like going, well, I'll just carry on doing what I'm doing until I'm told otherwise, until something gets leveled on me, and then I'll have to react to it then. I can't plan ahead. You know, we're talking to ad tech companies that are launching like products, like identity products, in sort of like June next year. You're sort of thinking, I mean, that's going to be defunct by then.
Well, it's, I was going to say it's pointless. Quite far away. Yeah. You know, in the world of what's happening in ad tech at the moment, yeah. So many things will have happened in that intervening 6 months.
You're in a vacuum, effectively. But you can see where this is heading, right? It's like, whether it's the ICO or whether it's ITP, right? And we're still waiting for Chrome to kind of, you know, for that shoe to drop at Google in terms of what Chrome is going to do around ITP. And it might come in the middle of next year, but there's a schism within Google between the commercial team and the Chrome team, because the Chrome team want to go all in on giving the user the option to block third-party cookies, right? Including all of the ad tech sort of infrastructure. So we're still waiting for that. We're in a vacuum. But there's one thing for clear that is clear. We have to plot a line that's going to be cookie-free, right? And that is the opportunity for ad tech to solve that, I guess. But one of the things I think is going to happen next year, we're going to see more of this, is 1,000 walled gardens will bloom, effectively. Mm. You're going to see a load of these sort of like pockets of supply, data-driven environments that...
Because they've got an identity solution within
that
walled garden.
Yeah, logged in data. I mean, you look at... You know, you look at the Snap and Pinterest, but Ozone could probably corral all the publishers together with a universal login, and suddenly you have a scaled display proposition based around identity, right? A login. You've got ITV. We had Lara Island in there a couple of weeks ago as well. She's talking about the ITV, and they've built this platform V, is it?
Yes.
Which is their scaled programmatic walled garden. You're going to have loads of these popping up. And I guess that's opportunity then, because then you've got to figure out, how do you build attribution around that? Because the cookie's not available. So there's going to be loads of startups popping up.
And how do you help brands navigate their way around all of those walled gardens, right?
I think
the service layer is going to have a real job to do to assist brands and marketers with making the use of that.
And you could argue that this is kind of similar where we were 15, 20 years ago, where we had this boom of innovation around ad tech, like proper innovation. And we're going to see some really good companies come out of this, like whether it's blockchain related or whether it's, you know, the stuff that Infosys is building around sort of like Kiva or like bringing data sets together or PII, non-PII related or more contextual like sort of technologies. But there's going to be lots of innovation. It's not just going to go away. It's a bit, when you've depended so long on one thing to be the bedrock of the industry, it's very hard to come off that, right? It's kind of a shock. People are still in shock about the whole thing. And we haven't even got into the pain process. The US is sort of insulated because CCPA is just becoming law in the US, but that will become just as bad there.
Absolutely. It'll be, we were just talking about this on a previous podcast that's just the start of the legislative journey in the US, because we already know that, you know, half a dozen other states are looking at very similar legislation, and then there's a case for creating a federal law that's going to cover all of this as well. So,
and there's cross-party consensus around the US
exactly.
About privacy.
They're all aligned with it.
So it's not, you know, running away from Europe, like, you know, the various ad tech companies that have gone from Europe because of GDPR, right? They're only they're only going to give themselves a couple of months or a couple of years before it hits them like a ton of bricks. Better to face it head on now.
But this is exactly the point about people are only looking like a few months ahead. They're not actually able to, they're being really myopic about it. They're not able to look any further ahead because they just don't know. But actually, all the US companies that are going, we're just going to leave Europe and we'll go to APAC because there's no regulation there. and we'll focus on our home market as well. Well, your home market is about to, you're about to have massive regulation levels against you. What are you going to do then? Come crawling back to Europe, probably.
And the thing about APAC, we won't let you in. The thing about APAC, I mean, it's really interesting. You know, that's one of the, we do a bit of APAC content, obviously, and we run a really big event out there. So we get the pleasure of meeting a lot of people in the APAC advertising and marketing technology space. We know that, you know, in existing incumbent walled gardens are heavily relied upon in those regions, but you're going to start to see some innovation coming out of particularly some of those Southeast Asian companies where it's affordable and to build technology and where you've got a highly educated population who are very internet and, you know, online literate in a marketplace where mobile devices are the main unifying source of connecting to the internet. So I think you are going to start to see some innovation in regions where maybe, you know, existing global ad tech companies, the likes of the US, might be thinking, oh, there's plenty of opportunity for us there in APAC. Yes, but there's also going to be a homegrown market there that's probably going to have some real fuel over the next kind of year or so because the marketplace is changing so dramatically everywhere else, my opinion. Silenced
great
everyone.
Opinion. Great
good,
opinion.
Isn't it?
Really good
yeah,
opinion.
Thanks
no,
very
I
much.
Think you're absolutely right. You are right.
I think it's because Kieran's got a mouthful of cheese and tuna and washing it down with Coke there.
Oh, God. It's just such a joy to be around, isn't he?
So one of the things that I thought was an interesting story in 2019 was this notion of brands buying publishers. And by that, obviously, we talked about the Nike story a couple of weeks ago, maybe now more than that, probably about 6 weeks ago now. And the thought behind it being that brands are looking to position themselves or align themselves with content that enables them to kind of get closer to their consumers, and that where they've not got that capability already existing in-house, purchasing it or finding someone that's already kind of got that audience that might be very similar to their profile target audience is an opportunity. Now, it lends itself a bit to the contextual argument that you were putting forward before, Matt, where there's maybe opportunity in that. But I think it's one of the most potentially interesting things that hasn't really attracted a lot of attention, but is something that you know, from an exchange my point of view, we think is quite interesting. You've got strong opinions on that, Kieran.
So I was just thinking about this the other day, actually. It would make sense for brands who don't have any first party data to acquire companies that their extended CRM, if you will. So, you know, the companies that, you know, because like acquisition costs are only going to rise within these walled gardens. Facebook, Google are not; they're pricey in terms of acquiring scaled audiences. So, why wouldn't a brand look around for a media property or a utility publisher? I mean that.
Define a utility publisher for us.
So, a utility publisher would be something where advertising is a secondary part of their business, and it's not really like your typical text-based media business, right? So, it's not news-led. It's more a case of like MyFitnessPal, who were bought by Under Armour. That's what I would describe as a utility publisher, right? So, it could be an app, or it could be a utility of some sort that users
would
use at scale.
Would you consider like news aggregation and things like that to be like that too?
No, because that's news business, isn't it? Like, so, you know, that's, you're still involved in the news business, which is sometimes brands don't want to buy a media business for that very reason, because they don't want to be embroiled in any PR you know, any kind of like.
So you're talking about like, say, Uber, Dropbox, WeTransfer, Grab in APAC.
Yeah, like those very, very, but it's difficult because a brand has to have some kind of, has to be aligned some way, shape or form. Like Under Armour buying my fitness plan makes sense because like Under Armour's fitness brand and it fits well with the brand. And obviously, given the nature of the actual app, it's sort of, it lends itself to the brand. So it's a tricky one, but I could see more of this happening, right? There's no doubt about it at all. The other thing that
you're
I was struggling
to digest your lunch there.
The other thing I was thinking about, just moving on, was that some big brands with first party data, why wouldn't they start? I mean, they've already done this, but why would not go hard into the media business, right? Think about it this way. You now have a load of ad money flowing around the place, right? It's not all going to go to Facebook and Google. A lot of the mid to long tip publishers are now going to be constrained in terms of where programmatic spend goes. So why would you not take that first part and spin up a media business? Again, a media business aligned. Like Boots, for instance, have something ridiculous amount of first party data they have on the UK
traffic.
Yeah, on UK sort of population. So I can see an opportunity there where some people within those and effectively they become utility publishers themselves because it's not advertising then becomes a secondary part of the business, but a pretty big part of the business. I mean, a lot of the stores do that already, but I can see some interesting. A lot of the ad tech talent is going to start flowing into these businesses. Go, by the way, we could have a £100 million media business, and it's like all to the bottom line. So why don't we just spin it up?
Mm.
So there's going to be some interesting, and it's all about data, right? It's logged in data for me. It's first party data. That's the table stakes for our industry now. If you don't have that, you're really going to struggle. And you know, we can have. I can see some. Fix it solutions, but the cookie was that sort of like framework that made things work. And I'm not really sure. It might take the likes of InfoSum and the rest of these guys to spin 2 or 3 years to spin this up.
Yeah.
And in that time, the industry is going to find a way.
Yeah.
And by the time they come around, maybe there's a whole new infrastructure that's not needed at all. So, you know, and maybe it's just that part, that technology is used for like super sensitive data, like, you know, like banks and telcos that want to use their data but can't because it's, you know, because it's sensitive. Customer data. Yeah. So it's going to be some interesting play around that. I think you may have publishers flip to become brands because they don't make enough money from advertising. So they head into the DTC space. Like, so they're going to see a lot of this moving around. You know?
What do you think, Lindsay? Going to see some movement in that part of the industry?
Definitely. I think that there's opportunity for brands become this hybrid brand publisher brand. I think we'll see a lot more of where people have got capacity to realize they've got inventory they can monetize. They've got space to actually make money off this, as well as, you know, you look at, we were talking in the office earlier about Expedia, for example. Mm. I view them as a brand because I know them as a brand from their huge advertising budgets, but also they also have a lot of inventory to monetize. They're the people that they are a massive publisher.
I'm sure as well.
And it's those kinds of like, what do you define them as? Well, don't need to define them. There's a new kind of type of hybrid term here. Kieran's looks like he's going to come up with a random word.
Bublisher.
Bublisher.
A bubbly bublisher. I don't know if we call him a bublisher. That's a bit crap.
Can't really call them a brand.
How about a brop?
Thanks for your... Yeah. A what?
A brop.
A brop. Thanks for your input, Kieran.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I just... But this opportunity, there's like... That I think brands are starting to realise there are ways for them to be able to have access to huge amounts of first party data.
Yeah.
And then when it comes to actually being a publisher, monetize that so much better because of the first party data they have access to as a brand. Like there's so much opportunity there to really work more closely. And because they're a brand themselves, they can work better with brands too. So actually their relationship, because they know what they're looking for.
Relationship, yeah. A bit more.
So there's so much opportunity there.
There's a land grab. There's definitely, in this vacuum, there's going to be a land grab, I think. You know, I think that's where we're heading here. And it people sort of like are a little bit hesitant and frightened about what's coming down the line. I think it's great. It's going to be a very interesting spot to be in. But probably the biggest losers is text-based publishing, like news publishers. So it's going to get really difficult for them. But
what, for them to sustain their businesses?
Well, their advertising business would be fine. I think probably a lot of the agencies will... Remember that display advertising now gets completely torn on its head in terms of measurement, right? Because you've no cookie window anymore, right? Mm. Particularly for Dior display. There's no Dior display anymore because there's no way to measure it because of the cookie window, because of ITP. So a whole new measurement layer has to be sort of
devised.
And I think that money will still go to premium publishers, but I'm talking about the premium guys. I'm not talking about middle or lower level guys. They're going to suffer badly. Because like ultimately you'll just be left with Google, AdSense, and some contextual targeting.
So what's going to happen to those mid-level guys then? Are they going out of business? They'll get bought.
I'd be putting myself on the market. I would say if I were a smaller publisher that isn't sure where my future's coming from. But then again, there are many small publishers that would be perfectly happy with an AdSense life.
Yeah,
I was going to say AdSense might be a nice business for some of them.
AdSense has been the oxygen for many publishers, and like they have other revenue streams, so you know, you know, you might end up getting to a point where like someone like WordPress Automatic, which is like the biggest CMS platform in the world, just instigates a login, and then there has a universe login across it, and becomes like companies like Automatic,
WordPress
are
absolutely
could nail this. They really could. They could be one of the most powerful media brands in the world. Because we're heading down
the basis
this
of their logged in data.
But they have no logged in data, but they could build a tool across, they could have a universal login across their entire platform. Across the entire platform, if they wanted to.
So are we going to see something happen in the world of universal logins, or will it be over to players like that that can do that across platforms that they already own? Are we going to see some real collaboration amongst traditional publishers?
I think it'll be difficult. I think everyone can see that there's a goal and that would be an ideal solution, but how it works in practice, I think it's pretty similar to the identity argument. Everyone, you know, if there was one single identifier to rule them all, happy days, problem solved. But that hasn't been the case because there are just logistical barriers to it. Mm. So it's a case of working out where, you know, how those problems can be overcome. And if not, then working out where's the alternative.
Ozone could do that, don't you?
They could. I think, actually, I was going to Matt's point, I was going to say the problem with a lot of these kind of coming together and people realising they need to collaborate is then egos come into play. And that's where, if you look at publisher alliances, that's where Ozone's done well, because Ozone is a separate entity. You do have four or five big publishers that have come together, but they're being managed by somebody else above that. It's why Pangea didn't work very well, because there wasn't that separate entity, but why Ozone...
Because it was owned by the Guardian, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's why Ozone can do a better job. And I think it would need someone... like multiple Ozone type companies that would be the leader of that, rather than asking, you know, say four or five big powerhouses to all lead together, because ultimately that's where it'll all go down the toilet probably.
Yeah, but the thing about the brands as well, as you talk about, those brands could probably pivot into CTV, or they could probably launch similar media brands elsewhere. You know, there is opportunity beyond just the web-based stuff, like, but it's there's got to be some. The problem with logging is that it's user experience, right? You don't want to be fecking logging into every single website. You need to have some layer.
Exactly,
it'll be.
And if Ozone can get the 10 biggest sites in the UK and say, look, one login for it all, and you monetize that user, then you know you could be on a really interesting sort of proposition. I think that's probably what they're going to try and push. Maybe that will. Half the traffic available, but you know, good news is hard to find. Like, you know, the BBC is fine, but what if you want more than that? Like, so I think people would prepare to trade a login for an access to content for use of their ID in targeting processes. And I think that's probably another thing this next year. There has to be some kind of education process about the trade-off, right? It costs money to create
with
content.
Consumers.
Yeah, it costs money to create content, costs money to build websites,
yep.
Costs money to maintain websites, and somebody has to pay for that, and you're paying with your intention. Now, GDPR restricts, as in the regulation, says you cannot restrict access to some content, right? Unless it's behind a paywall. This is where I think the law gets really, really woolly, because what do you define as subscription-based content versus what content can should be? Can ever be behind a paywall? Do you have to get, like... You know, if you log in, you can't be forced to opt in to targeting on the site. But there has to be some kind of trade-off. And I guess the education process has not been done very well by the industry.
Definitely not. I think we could all agree on that, hands down. But then doesn't that sort of mix, that hybrid of subscription and ad-funded models, make it complicated to create a single login across properties? Because some of those properties will have a hybrid model. Some will be ad-funded only. Some will be principally subscription-funded only. So how does that get managed, and who manages it?
No one.
The sound of silence.
Well, there are companies out there. There are companies out there like Piano, which is a really interesting company who have built the whole layer to manage that. And I guess we even our own sort of we built a sort of login process for DTC Index, and there's MemberPress. Yes. It's kind of basic, but there are software providers out there that kind of can help you manage that process.
But presumably, that's part of what the likes of Ozone will have to deal with.
Yes. And that's why, and Lindsay's right, that's why it's having simple. A layer above the publishers, like Ozone, and Ozone's a big story this year because they've been everywhere, but they've cleverly position themselves as that tech layer, because all the publishers go, I don't have the bandwidth or the resource to figure this shit out because it's such a huge problem. I'll get Ozone to figure it out, and Ozone makes recommendations back to the publishers. And that's the very reason why I think Ozone, more than the other sort of corporates or whatever you call them,
publisher co-ops.
Yeah, publisher co-ops.
We call them corporates.
Corporates, corporations.
Those publisher corporates.
Yeah.
Peanut butter toast corporates, that sort of thing.
They fail because they haven't had the buy-in from the publishers. The publishers have made significant investment into this proposition. They've all invested about £1 million each. So this is not... It's been underwritten by the publishers to solve these very problems.
Yeah. What else? I mean, Kieran, you've skillfully shared your opinions on all of those big stories for the year. Yeah. But is there something that stands out in your mind that we haven't already talked about, which is a feature of 2019 beyond cookies, beyond ID?
I mean, I guess the absolute obsession with connected TV has been like every man and his dog has been trying to tell where.
But the opportunity hasn't been realised yet, though,
has it? It's not real.
Not in Europe.
Not in Europe.
In any case, everyone's trying to replicate what's happening in the US, but the US is such a different market. You just can't do that at the moment.
Tell us what you were trying to say to Scott Galloway on LinkedIn the other day, Kieran.
I think the analysis from American analysts is very US-focused, right, and doesn't take into account European habits, right? So we weren't raised on paying $200 a month for cable. We got free to air TV, right? And we're brought up that. Some households got Sky because of the football, but that's become, I think less and less people are signing up to that. But the reality is we're not going to pay for every single subscription coming along, right? And I think next year, maybe even this year, we've hit peak subscription. I think that people have had enough. And I think this is an interesting one. I think the one thing that people kind of, you know, poo-poo, not us, but outside the industry, is that AVOD isn't going to take on, right? People don't mind ads, particularly TV ads. TV ads can be entertaining, can be better than display ads. And I think that AVOD will be a huge theme next year.
I completely agree with you on that. I think that's really underestimated, hugely underestimated.
Yeah, I agree with that. But my concern about AVOD is that if these are American companies bringing ad-funded models to different platforms in Europe, American consumption of TV advertising is completely so different.
Really,
like Hulu in the US, there are ads literally everywhere. There are now even ads on the pause screen. They're just everywhere, yeah. And they're inserted, they're overlaid, they're all over the place. You bring that model to the UK or to Europe, it will be responded to in a very, very different way. So there's that. We ad funded, I think, definitely AVOD is going to be huge, but I think it needs to be
European.
Yeah, it needs to be culturally sensitive.
Well, if
basically.
It's going to work in Europe, do you think that perhaps they might be looking to other markets in the first instance? Because, you know, that's where Netflix is looking to for user number growth, is Asia.
Yeah.
Do you think that they'll just be trying to bombard those markets, maybe thinking it's a bit easier to sort of, you know, deliver a US style ad funded model?
Probably.
Mm.
Australia. You said you had loads of ads.
We have loads of ads, yeah. But I mean, not quite as bad as the US, but certainly significantly more than here in the UK. I, it's only been this year as we've been having that conversation that I've been reminded how little ad clutter interrupts TV viewing in Europe. I'd forgotten all about that because I've lived here for a long time.
Yeah.
Anyway, but I've forgotten all about that. Firstly, because I don't watch, telly with ads. And secondly, because I've just been living here for such a long time. And you know yourself, whenever you go to the US and turn the telly on in the hotel or whatever, you're like,
holy crap.
You can't, there's no story to watch.
No.
It's just advertising.
Yeah, and the sports, like NFL is all built around being able to show ads in between.
Yeah,
the
built around
stop
money.
Same with
baseball, mm-hmm. Like, and you change pitchers, there's a truck ad or something.
Yeah.
Ad for Viagra.
Not tolerated at all in the same way in Europe.
Yeah.
Let's just do a quick round the table of opportunities then. We've kind of touched on them.
Opportunities.
Oh, that's
lovely. We could sing our responses.
That's really quite something.
Matt, I'm going to start with you. And I wonder, I mean, you'll have your own things in your mind, but I'm going to cue this in here to see if you want to talk about it.
No.
Thanks, Lindsay.
You're welcome.
I was going to say gaming.
Oh, Jesus. I was going
to. Okay, well, you can take just gaming. Yeah.
No, let Matt do it.
Yeah, you're going to
find something else.
Say something. In terms of gaming, I think free-to-play mobile apps, they've seen huge growth. And also you're seeing the streaming platforms coming in. Obviously, you've got Stadia, you've got Project xCloud from Microsoft. And it'd be interesting to see how those work with advertisers. And also in terms of the mobile space, you've got things like Google Play Pass and Apple Arcade, where they're kind of going, we want to be that kind of layer overseeing the apps, and then the revenue flows for us. And then it's kind of like news aggregation, but for gaming apps. And it's like, how will that work for the publishers? How will that work for the users? They'll probably like it if the subscriptions are low enough. But it's a case of how can that work as an industry going forward?
Many, many things to potentially resolve, but yeah. It just feels like there's endless potential opportunity in that.
Exactly.
Kieran, did you want to add something to that? Because you wanted to talk about gaming?
I think the biggest opportunity next year is in app, right?
Oh, I was going to say that. Yeah, same. Bloody hell.
Stealing the thunder.
No, because actually, you know what? This probably deserves multiple opinions. Because actually, it is unbelievable. It's criminal that it's not being seen as a bigger opportunity for programmatic buyers, right? So look at what's happening in the web-based stuff, right? It's going to become really, really hard to buy at scale in programmatic in 2020, right? Unless to solve the problems, and particularly video, right? So there's a video constraint on web-based properties. But as Matt alluded to, you know, incentivized video is huge, right? King has built a huge business off the back of it. And I think that there's going to be a sea change. You think about the mobile ID, right? You still have the Android ID. You still have IDFA on Apple for a period of time. But in Europe, it doesn't really matter. If Apple goes away, it's only a small portion of the market compared to the US. Okay, they've got 30% market share in the UK. But the Android rules in this part of the world. It is the king. And I think that it's, if you were looking for a new job in the space right now, in-app would be going. And Iron Source, who the Israeli in-app ad network, is a testament to that. They've just been 20% has been acquired for nearly $250 million by a private equity company, which values them at nearly $1.7 billion. That's a serious testament to the size of that market. And, you know, Google are obviously very dominant there, but they don't rule the roost.
They don't have a stranglehold.
And remember this now, right? Ad networks rule, like, that whole space. That means there's this huge opportunity for programmatic to come in and actually sort all that mess out, right? So header bidding is still a thing, but it's coming. And the ability to manage sort of multiple ad networks yield. That's not really available in app yet. And that's a huge opportunity for people to shift focus away from sort of web based entities into in app. And I think that's the biggest opportunity for me. I think I think we'll be singing from the rooftops next year. Like, if you're an agency, a trading desk, you would be stupid not to shift money there, because it's just logical.
Lindsay?
I totally agree with everything Kieran said. So eloquently. I think that the challenges around in-app are still brands not trusting it. And that is the huge barrier that needs to be overcome. We know that there's inventory there. We know there's opportunity there. We know that the user base, the audience is there. But it's still very fraudulent. Brands don't really know how to target it. But they're still targeting mobile, and by mobile web mostly. Might be a bit of an app thrown in there, but they're not really sure how to buy. They don't really have the guidance or the education that they need in terms of in that space. Some agencies have mobile teams, but it's still not big enough, and brands don't know what direction to head in and what they're doing. And also brands sort of feel like, okay, in-app means Candy Crush Saga. Which don't knock it though, because there's a huge audience there of, and people still think of, you know, we talked about gaming, Matt, can your perspective on that? People think of gaming still as like these sweaty, hairy people sitting in their mum's basements.
Sweaty, and hairy people.
I don't know why. There's an image for you, isn't it? Sweaty, hairy people.
Marcus dropped 55 billion.
Do you mean trolls?
Yes, trolls. Trolls.
Marcus dropped 55 billion UGC in Facebook every year, which is incredible. And yet they see Candy Crush as being brand new.
I completely agree with you.
I think it's utter bullshit.
I completely agree with what Lindsay's saying there. It's not, that audience is not what, it doesn't fit the stereotype.
No,
not stereotype. Types out of date.
It's actually
young females.
It's actually women
games.
Women in their 30s and 40s.
Exactly.
If you want that kind of audience, then go go to the free to play hyper casual games. That's absolutely where there's huge opportunity in app. But also, if you are a brand that's looking to go into in app, you cannot use your standard display strategy for in app advertising. Mm. And that's the other challenge, is actually how you gamify your advertising strategy for mobile.
That's the other opportunity off the back of that, right? So Google, I've been told by several independent agencies in the UK that Google are trying to get more and more agencies to work in the in-app space because it's underserved, right? So to Lindsay's point, big holding groups do not have expertise in gaming. It is a massive opportunity for independents to come up and say, by the way, we have all this capability in-app. Why would you ignore? Like, it's not just Google, right? It's Apple, right? Apple's download store or app store is a huge opportunity. Like, yeah. It's like ignored. I am going, oh my God, it's like, this is like one of the biggest platforms in the world in terms of like user downloads and interactions with apps. So these are opportunities that the independents will probably hoover up, because the holding groups can't move quick enough. Mm. And a lot of them outsource it to the iron sources and all the rest of them. But, you know, it's just not... just for gaming apps, this is brands, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
There's DTCs, there's a massive opportunity.
Definitely. And that, I suppose that was the only bit that I'd add to what everyone's already said about the opportunity in mobile in-app and gaming, is that I often think, sort of, you know, if I'm doing a bit of a reflection over the year, when I get to the end of the year, I sort of think what has been different about the way I've kind of lived my day-to-day life this year than the previous year. And that is my measure of interacting with technology. Yes, you know. It's not...
Not in the way of sitting around
having a discussion with
someone. Dear diary, today I use the apps twice.
Oh, I've got a hole in my jumper.
I hate you so much, Kieran. Yeah, anyway, that's a separate podcast.
I hate you so much, Kieran.
Oh, that'd be a great series. Yeah.
Well, you know, there's Ian Lindsay.
There'll be many people in that series.
Oh, yeah. Ian Lindsay, of course.
And why I am so hateful, Kieran.
Yeah. Hold on.
That's episode three.
Yes. I'm full of love and joy. Mm.
What I mean to say is... It's the bit where I think what's happened from a technology point of view that's changed the way I do ordinary things. So last year, even though I'd been shopping online for ages, it was much more interaction with and discovery of DTC brands than ever before. And this year, those brands are advertising to me when I'm casual gaming, and that's the thing that's different.
Yeah.
Thinking if I'm doing that, that's what everybody else is doing, and if those DTC brands are successfully getting their ads in front of me, then they are absolutely able to target their audiences in an even more sophisticated way. And anyone that can help them do that and then can then show the success that those DTC brands are getting from that and try to showcase that to other bigger legacy brands who are still set in a bit of a mindset about, the drawbacks of mobile in-app advertising, that's when you're really going to start to see things shifting.
I think the Fetch thing and Uber,
It is Fetch.
That's still... burnt a lot of brands, I guess, but
it has done.
But then you look at the actual way they were buying the app, and the metrics were all wrong.
Yeah, that was a couple of years ago, where you would not where those formats weren't consumed as much as they are now. The point being that I think we're all making is that everyone is gaming more than ever before, and everyone is buying stuff and consuming stuff directly online more than they ever have before.
Yeah.
So that is where the opportunity is.
And if you're scared of fraud, go to the publishers directly.
Yeah.
Like so many of them. And also they even help with creative now. So all the ad networks the mobile ad networks we talked about, and the DSPs that operate in a purely in-app space, they help with creative. So they can help you gamify your advertising if you don't have the resources to do it internally. But so do the publishers as well. Like Gameloft is a great example. We've had them speak at ATS a couple of times this year. They've built their own tech stack. They're working directly with brands to help them navigate their platform. Obviously it's direct, it's fraud-free, and they help you build creative. So there should be no excuse for you to be getting in front of those audiences.
No, I think they just need, it's just about enablement, support, guidance, just being that part of the industry becoming more sophisticated. Mm. That's all it's about.
But the wind is in app sales in terms of, like, you know, the events coming down the line. You know, ITP and all the rest. I mean, surely, you know, at some stage the ICO will probably turn its attention to in-app and you know, the consent framework within
in-app. They've got
in-app.
A lot to deal with mobile.
Oh, my
with
God,
web,
the web,
web
is endless.
Yeah,
like, it, I mean, it's... It, I think they've bitten off.
It will drown them.
I can't wait to meet in 12 months' time They look like Barack Obama. They look like Barack Obama 8 years on, like, you know, withered and fucking, you know,
grey haired.
Yeah. Still in his Christmas outfit though.
Yeah.
Coming down the chimney near you.
I think one of the other things out of the back of this is that the big area of interest to other. Next year is going to be the independent layer. Is the service layer? It's like the
bit. Ah, yes, I was going to raise that earlier. Actually,
massive opportunity.
So you sort of you summarised this well just recently in unbelievably earlier in the week in the office, Ciaran. When you said there is going to be an enormous opportunity for anyone that can help brands navigate their way around the further complexities
yep.
that are going to be created
yep.
as a fallout from a cookie-less
yep.
environment.
There's going to be thousands of walled gardens, and every time another one pops up, it's like, how do I get around this? How do I navigate? And they can in-house everything, but they can't keep abreast of every single new platform. And someone's going to have to be that buffer to figure it out, right? And stitch an attribution model towards it. Because then, you know, obviously you got to think about frequency capping and your metrics and all the rest of it, and your attribution. But there's going to be a big opportunity. I mean, if you've seen all the M&A recently, it's all independents get acquired. Like Trade Lab buys who was it? Trade Lab bought
Jellyfish.
Jellyfish. Sir Marty's buying
agency
every single agent. Yeah. And like he's,
do you know, it took us 48 minutes to mention him.
I know. I was thinking that. Might, surely that was one of your highlights of the year, Ciaran.
Oh yeah.
You and
one of mine was it was him telling you to shut up.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, the man's a legend. So you
I mean,
can
I
shut
enjoyed that as
wants.
Well, Lindsay. Yeah.
but you can see what's happening right now is all of the things we thought would happen 10 years ago when programmatic arrived in the scene is now happening right now, right?
Because the wheels have changed.
Capital,
slow.
Trade Lab. No, but the digitization of media has fueled this this whole
sure.
process.
But it doesn't happen as quickly as you think it's
going
to.
No, and also the holding groups. Remember that, like. I think the holding groups are a real trouble, hey, proper trouble, and we won't see the effect of this until after the Olympics and the presidential election in the US. Mm. But you know, there's going to be some fallout here. I mean, look, this year, Publicis, for instance, they had an $8 billion valuation. Now, if you took out Sapient and is it Acxiom they bought,
yes,
if you took them out of that whole process and their value, the core company was only worth $800 million, right? And that day, Sir Marty was worth
more.
Do you
mean Epsilon?
Epsilon, so yeah. Not Axiom, Epsilon.
Oh, was it not Axiom?
No, Axiom were bought by somebody else. I can't remember.
we're full of knowledge, aren't we?
IPG.
It was IPG,
right.
Yeah.
So, you know, they were worth only 800 million. On that day, Sir Marty was worth more money in terms of, and actually, the entire company, the value, it's gone up since, but the value of Publicis was actually less than the Trade Desk. So, you know, we have this weird thing going on right now that where the holding groups are not even valued the way they should be.
Appropriately. Mm. But then you've got to look at what's going on over at WPP. You know, they've been in the news a lot lately for consolidating their organisation, scaling things down, you know, returning themselves to a bit of a better financial position. Maybe they're preparing themselves for 2020.
But there's two things that they need that haven't been factored in, right? One is that the big CPG brands are sort of cutting back, right? Procurement's cutting everything. They're in-housing a lot of the processes. They're consolidating their agencies. They're spending less on marketing or marketing services, which means that the holding groups are getting killed because that's their bread and butter. Lindsay could probably talk about how they actually make more money from smaller brands, but you know what I mean? It's the optics of it all, right? These big brands are cutting back. The second thing that hasn't happened, and it will happen, not this year, the year after, there's going to be a recession. And in recession, there's going to be cutbacks in terms of spend. And I think the holding groups are just so bloated and so overwhelmed with, you know, the mental staff they have and their sort of inflexible working process and the lack of tech and the just lack of readiness for the new world, which has completely changed, that some of them are going to probably fail or be bought by PE. And nobody's talking about this because obviously they still have lots of money and lots of power. Some of them will survive. There's no doubt about that. WPP maybe Dentsu and a few others will definitely survive. Maybe a few of them will figure out a model,
they'll have to look very different to the way that they look now.
But when you have independence like Infectious winning big brand budgets from the big holding groups, what does that say to you? Like, you know, Maren Kelly is a genius. We had him on this podcast, as is Andy.
Like which is always the mark of having reached genius.
He's a genius.
But those two men are geniuses, and it's a great company. But they're small compared to the big holding groups. Like, and they're taking massive business away from them. Like, it's incredible.
You mentioned like maybe they'll get bought by PE. Maybe getting bought by PE is what would actually change them, because PE, you have to. Your focus is on margin, your focus is on profit. And actually being bought by a PE firm would mean you would literally have to strip out the entire company and almost start again.
Mm.
Strip mining.
That's what they would end up doing with them.
Well, maybe you're right, Lindsay. Maybe that's what will happen. Take them private and then basically strip mine them and then spin them back out public when they're in better state in a couple of years' time.
Well, I think with all the changes that are happening in the industry that we've already talked about in terms of what was big this year and what we think is going to happen next year, and the pace at which the way brands are having to build their businesses because consumerism is changing so much, there's no two ways about the fact that agencies and the service layer will look incredibly different to what it looks like now. Probably sooner than you imagine. I know we talk about the changing service layer every year, but actually another 12 months from now, you could expect to see some significant change.
I think you're going to see a lot of new companies popping up.
I was about to say, even if it's smaller, newer,
think about
service layer.
Think about Digital Out of Home, right? Digital Out of Home we've covered it this year. It is absolutely legacy ridden, right? It's like there's a lot of people who just don't want the needle to move. There's an opportunity there for an agency to pop up and actually start doing a lot of this. Directly. So there's going to be loads of specialists popping up doing some interesting stuff. And it's exciting. I think, I mean, that for me, the service layer probably looks the most exciting area right now, given all the M&A. And now you're like,
it's the first time in a couple of years that we've talked about the service layer from a point of view as potential new opportunities. You know, we have been talking the last couple of years about how much they needed to change, how, you know, antiquated their business models were and their approach to XYZ was, with the exception of independent service partners. But now it's starting to really look like an interesting landscape. For the first time in a couple of years, we've run out of time.
Have we?
Yeah,
have we?
So we're only starting.
We're only just starting.
So, Johnny Rains is on a second course now. With a talkie in his mammy's garage.
Ridiculous.
All right, Johnny.
Ridiculous notion. Oh my God. Just before wrapping up, I wanted to shout out to our amazing sound guy, Rodney.
Yes.
Yeah. Puts up with us. To our temporary sound guys, that would be Lindsay Rowntree.
Hi there.
Anne-Marie Sheedy, not in the room. That's me pretending to be her.
That was great, wasn't it?
She's in the room.
I believed it.
Totally. Shout out to a fantastic list of guests, because we've been running the Mad Tech podcast for a bit over a year. We've got an amazing following. We've interviewed some incredible people. We really enjoy the enthusiasm of everyone that comes in here and takes time out of their diary to record the podcast with us. We always appreciate feedback, so let us know what you think we should be talking about in 2020. Kieran's laughing because he doesn't actually always.
Cheese sandwich. He's mad. I'm just going to talk about how Google's destroying the industry anyway. So.
But before we
never talk about Mark Zuckerberg or Facebook. Jesus.
I know. Actually, we didn't mention Facebook at all. Okay. Well, maybe there might need to be staff podcast part two. Perhaps we can do one in the new year.
Yeah.
That's something to look forward to.
This was fun. We should do it. It was fun, definitely.
But before we say goodbye, there's just a little special guest that wants to say something.
Oh, yes.
You fucking did it.
The exchange wire Christmas tree.
How's it going?
You've got to squeeze his foot.
I am.
Well, don't tell me.
There we go. Kieran stays.
Kieran loves Dwayne.
I can't turn it off. Can you turn it off?
Oh, you might be able to.
There we go. Dwayne, our Christmas tree.
Exchange my Christmas tree.
And why is he called Dwayne, Rachel?
He's called Dwayne because I purchased him many years ago in New York in Dwayne Reed. good a reason as any.
Dwayne's seen a lot of darkness.
And yesterday, Kieran...
I was thinking about him one night. He saw a lot of darkness, that day.
Well, you threw him across the room yesterday too, so
it
in
was,
a fit
it,
of pee.
We were having a bit of fun.
Yeah.
What, you and Dwayne?
Yeah. I kick him about the place.
Oh my god,
thanks everyone for listening. Merry Christmas.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. And that was the Mad Tech podcast.